Welcome to this edition of Quest Point in the Mix. I'm your host, Richard Andrews, and today I'm really fortunate to speak with Terry Flynn. Terry is an accomplished architectural designer, and she's a partner at Flynn, Craig,
and Grant
Architects in the East Bay. Terry has a BA in architecture from UC Berkeley, and she's the principal in charge of design. And Terry brings award-winning projects and high-end design experiences to the firm, including shopping centers, office buildings, multifamily, live-work loft conversions, and historic reuse. And I met Terry at the opening of the new Hub SOMO in San Francisco's Chronicle Building, where she was a featured speaker. She was the designer that designed the new hub, which is the largest of the 22 hubs around the globe. And the hub is a co-working space, event series, and professional tool set for change makers. Terry, you were the designer on this really unique facility and one of the founders who bought the hub to Berkeley. There's also a hub in Berkeley, California. Would you please give our listeners some background on the hub concept and how you arrived at picking the Chronicle Building for the hub in San Francisco? And what is radical collaboration?
Those are very good questions. I'm not one of the official founders of the hub. The hub was founded in London, the original two hubs, about 5-6 years ago, and the concept spread. It was an interesting idea to be not just a co-working space, but a co-working place for people involved with socially responsible new organizations and businesses so that they could work together and collaborate on growing their businesses, growing their organizations, and changing the world, really. I mean, they have...
It's a pretty tall order, yeah.
It's a very tall order. And the concept has spread over Europe and then around the world. And Bay Area Hub founders, Kevin and Rosalie Jones, Tim Freundlich, together invested in the idea. They decided to bring it to the United States. So Berkeley and San Francisco were the first two hubs in the United States. They recently had one open in Atlanta.
There's one in Atlanta, okay.
And they're working on one in New York City right now. Brought in as the architect. I'm also an investor in the hub.
Okay.
And so I've been very, very involved, and it's been one of the most interesting architectural design jobs I've ever done. Certainly not one of the largest. It's sort of a boutique type job, but absolutely fascinating because my client is the hub members collectively. And we did different public meetings with them, great brainstorming sessions. And we designed this to be, I mean, I had the fortune of seeing London, the London hubs, and seeing how those worked and how those functioned and how their members had designed theirs. We brought those ideas to here. We sort of tweaked them a little per our U.S. culture. And so we came up with just a very different kind of workspace. And one of the things people wanted is they wanted a place that would not be institutional, that would be inspiring, that would be creative. Part of the founder's idea here with collaborating with Intersection for the Arts and having an art gallery that's sort of an offshoot of the hub is it brings another dimension of creativity into the space. Because physical space can either, it gives us a lot of subliminal messages that we don't really even aren't aware of most of the time. But the space was every corner of it. It seems like it was just thrown together in this crazy industrial space. But every corner was sort of thought through as far as how will people circulate through here? How do we use this space? How does this space get transformed? Part of the green nature of choosing the Chronicle Building, well, one, it's rather symbolic because as the old press shrinks, We have a new world of different businesses using new technologies that are coming into the hub. But it's great because you're a block from BART. You've got so much mass transit. You're in a dense urban area. And then we use this space very densely. Not only do we pack people in a little tighter than you would a normal work area, which is a green thing to do. We're trying not to waste space. And several businesses share the conference rooms and the coffee bar. So that's all very green. We're doing a lot of sharing so that everybody gets a little nicer facility. And we're not duplicating things that are rarely used. And then the space, occasionally parts of it will get used for events or night meetings and things. So instead of the typical office that's occupied 60% of the time, 8 hours a day, the hub is intended to be occupied much more than that, much more densely. So it's a whole model of being green. I personally think that even conventional office space is gradually going to move towards that model.
I agree.
Because we need to. We can't afford to build buildings that are vacant.
Sure. I mean, you've got beautiful office buildings here in downtown San Francisco that are occupied during the day, but at night they empty out, and here, you know, probably 60% of the time they're sitting empty.
Yeah. And then also there's... people are more mobile now, and people much more work in different locations or at home, but we still have our office down there downtown.
Sure.
Sure, exactly.
Let me ask you about that and the design space as it relates to this concept of radical collaboration. And can you talk about that and then kind of the underpinning of how you thought about that as it relates to this hub?
Sure. People come here primarily to meet the people they need to meet because there's a lot of very interesting people who work out of this space, very interesting businesses, and just a lot of events that draw the people in that social change sector to this place. So one of the things that makes this very different as radical collaboration, what that means is this space is designed for people to meet and get to know the people they need to get to know. And so we don't have it divided up into little semi-private cubicles or study carrels or anything. It's designed to sit around tables. We call them petal tables. Each leaf of the table, they have round edges for a reason. It's so you can gather around easily. And all of those tables are designed to promote interaction between people. They're designed for chit-chatting. The work bars at the window are more designed for when you come in and for some reason you want to be at the hub, but you don't want to be bothered. So you can sit and look out the window while you work. Or there's also a work bar around our hubland, which is our entry area, kind of entry lounge reception area, in progress. The design is in progress. So we have five different, the idea is that with laptops, people are mobile with their work. And so even when you come into the hub, we see people as mobile. So depending on what you need to do, we have different places to be. So for casual collaboration and working with other people, we have our collaborate area, which is the main area with tables where people sit facing each other. They can get eye contact. They can share information across the table side to side. We have the work bars for more private, don't bother me, I'm just working by myself type of work. We have the privacy booths. Those are when you need to get on a phone call or have a couple, two, three people in a tiny meeting and you just want to, or get around a conference call. that's what
you
those.
You get a call, you don't want to disturb everybody.
Right, or it's maybe it's kind of private.
Right.
You don't.
Right.
It's one of those you just would rather people can't hear. Those were designed to be there, insulated, and they have loud fans which can, you know, mask any noise. And then so we have those three. And then we have our large conference rooms for obviously big meetings and seminars. And then the Hubbell is the special piece, which we designed as the perfect brainstorming room.
That's kind of a sexy room too, isn't it? It's cool. It's way cool.
It's intended to be way cool. It's intended, it's round, it's translucent glass, and if you don't mind, real quickly, I'll go through the whole methodology behind the design because it's based on IDEO's brainstorming. IDEO is a company in headquartered in Palo Alto, and they are considered the premier design firm in the world.
Oh, okay.
They design everything from glasses. I mean, large companies hire them to do product design.
Okay.
And their founders have written several books about brainstorming, and they're considered the people who know it and perfected the thing. So one of their rules that they had come up with is that in a brainstorming session, every idea is important.
Every idea is important.
Every idea is important, and everybody in the room is important. The leader isn't the one who's supposed to be giving all the ideas. Everybody gives ideas because you don't know where the next great idea is coming from. So I purposefully made a round room and a round table because that is the most democratizing shape, because there's no head of the table. Every single seat is the same, and psychologically, it gives you more the feeling like we're all here on a level playing field. This is everybody here is the same, and that's the way it's supposed to feel. The other thing is, IDEO says get crazy with your brainstorms, and you never know what's gonna really turn out to be important. I decided we needed kind of a room for brainstorming that felt special, that felt a little bit wild and unreal. Mm-hmm. So that translucent glass kind of creates an artistic effect. When you're in there, it's a little bit like being in a bubble. You see shapes and patterns moving around outside. And then, of course, the third idea of brainstorming is you just cover the walls with ideas. And typically, IDEO uses post-it notes. That's their thing. They cover the walls with post-it notes. But in the Hubbell, every single surface of the room, including the door, the translucent glass works as a writable whiteboard. So you can write all over. It's a room for writing on the walls. And we expect great ideas to come out of that room. So that's a tool for our members, is the Hubbell, the brainstorming room. We also have a lounge area and member land, which displays the members, a photo of them, their business, a description, and it's like a wall where everyone can be displayed and get to know who the other people in their hub are, and so they recognize them when they see them, and they can do network more easily. And then we have some kind of casual, cozy kind of meeting areas, touchdown areas in that room.
Is that what you call them, touchdown areas?
Yeah, touchdown, or where you just kind of soft, just like sit down for just two or three, you know, with two or three just on the fly, say, oh, let me show you what I'm doing kind of thing. Or we could just sit here and talk for a few minutes kind of thing. And then the last place we created, this is just for fun, but you know you're working and sometimes you're trying to think things through and you just need a different perspective. That's why we created the Nest. And that's a little loft place. You just go up there. It's kind of soft, beanbag chairs. You look out over the rest of the hub. And it's just for sitting and just getting away a bit and getting, you know, literally a new perspective.
That's an interesting
on your work.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice of words that you use too, the word perspective. and nest, pull away and get a broader view looking back at what you're at what you've been doing.
Yeah. It's just, you know, sometimes you just need a break, and that's just, it feels, you go up those steps, you do the, you climb the ladder. It's a ship's ladder up to the nest. And the process is like, okay, you're in a different kind of place. It's just changing the elevation. It does something to us. So the nest is also a tool. And I've seen people up there with their laptops and just got, I just thought I'd come up here and just think about things.
Right.
You know?
Right. Now you have, there's another hub in Berkeley.
Yes.
Is the design here similar to that? Is it different than that?
Berkeley is so much smaller. We just could put a touch of what we have here. In Berkeley, we only have one meeting room. The David Brower Center has other meeting rooms within the facility, but the hub itself only has one meeting room. We have the pedal tables. We have a couple of privacy booths, but, you know, it's small. We don't have a nest. We don't have a Memberland lounge. We have a kitchen, you know, a coffee area. It's got the same feel.
How does this space differ from other day offices, other
co-working
centers that are...
Well, one of the ways I've heard it described is this isn't necessarily just renting office space. This is... Most co-working spaces will basically take anybody, any business, which is, you know, great. That's what they're there for.
They will take anybody.
They'll take anybody. But the hub recruits people in that whole just business space of socially aware new businesses. And so it's, and all of, they have events and all sorts of things around that, and they're very much about coming up with capital and supporting those. I mean, co-working spaces typically don't have, you know, venture capitalist partners.
Hanging around.
Right. But the hub does.
Right.
And they have legal services for the for their members. They have...
The word that I've heard used before, an entrepreneurial incubator...
A much more creative and artistic and focused entrepreneurial incubator. So one of my things that I had to do was figure out, we had a somewhat limited budget, was how do you make a space that feels special and feels inspiring for people? So that was my goal.
Well, I think you've definitely accomplished that.
Thank you.
What surprised you about working on this project that maybe you didn't expect to?
Surprised me. Well, to rephrase that a little bit, I think what I found so fun about working on this project is everybody was so ready to just get out of the box and think about things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've designed office space for 20 years, and typically people have a very, you know, we need this and we need this and we need this, and it's very regimented. And here it was all about, you know, do your best work. This is also an art piece. This is about, you know, it was just about layered with so many other things.
Yeah, it's interesting, the history of this building being in the San Francisco Chronicle and building and...
Yeah, that's very cool, too.
Yeah, and seeing the change that they've gone through. I mean, isn't that... That's interesting how you came across this space.
It is, and I wasn't involved with selecting this, but I just heard, we might be able to go into the Chronicles building. What do you think? And I said, that's awesome. That would be great. And when I saw that it was a space with, you know, 14-foot ceilings and these big concrete mushroom pillars that buildings in San Francisco built in the 1920s mostly have, I just said, oh, this is great. Yeah, let's peel this back and see what we can find.
What did you find? Or should I ask?
No. Oh my gosh.
Some old editors back there, yes, we found their body.
Well, what I found is I had never been in a space ever where we took down the ceiling and there was this much stuff. Because we are right in the heart of the building. I mean, we're in the heart of the first floor. There's two floors above us, and there's two floors of basement below us. So every piece of plumbing and air conditioning and electrical conduit passes through our ceiling. So it's like totally being in this giant industrial space. I mean, I had expected we would take that down and we would have, you know, one or two ducts. I was not prepared for the wires and the this and the that. It was just, but I realized it gives the building, the space, kind of an energy.
Oh, yeah, it gives it depth.
It really does.
And dimension.
It gives it depth and energy and dimension, and you can almost sense all the air and the water and everything flowing, and it's just like, woo!
Yeah, well, and the historical nature of seeing, you know, in some respects, seeing the you know, Chronicle as it has changed from being primarily a print publication to now having this online presence, and the evolution of media to what it's become. It's interesting that you're here. For me, I saw the symbolism in that.
Oh yeah, it's a lot of symbolism. Well, even more symbolism is I found out this space, which when we tore it apart was executive office space built in probably the 1960s. Before that, when they still did the printing in the building, it was a big factory space where they put together, assembled the newspapers. So we kind of brought it back to its original factory roots.
Yeah, exciting. What has evolved or changed in the architectural space since you first got in it? And where do you see this, your field, your expertise going?
This was such a unique situation for me to design an office space easily from the bottom up, because each member is an entrepreneur in their own right with their own input. And I realized the power of understanding how people really want to work. And so since then, I've really tied in with some people who are Jim Ware is a man who has a business called The Future of Work. He's a former professor who advises companies on changing how their people work, more working out of the office, getting out of cubicles, that sort of thing. And actually, he and I are collaborating on a book. I've started it just in the beginnings of it, about where the office is going. I mean, this really... You see office space changing little by little by little, but I think, you know...
This is a leap.
This is a huge leap. So this is like, yeah, you know, brackets the other end. But somewhere in the middle, you know, a lot of the lessons learned in a space like this do apply to just your corporate office space. Could be a much more inspiring place to work. I mean, how creative do you feel when you're boxed in a cubicle?
Not very.
You feel like, okay, get with the program. What's the program? Let's do the program.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yet when you have people working in a situation where they work offsite part of the time, they meet for collaboration, they have some say over where they sit and how they work, it creates a whole different environment, a feeling of power over what you're doing and respect for what you're doing. And I believe it can unlock a lot of potential for American business. We wanted it to be a space. And it does feel also, I mean, it has that kind of aura of an artist loft in here, which is part of, you know, just the subtle, you know, symbolism as you're in here working. It feels special.
Was there anything else you'd like to add or share? I mean, Terry, I'm just really so pleased to be able to talk with you and to have you...
I am honored to talk about the Hub. I mean, it's, like I said, it's It's really my favorite project I've worked on in a long time because it was just, I mean, how often do they say, okay, this is, it's designed to make people creative, you know? And so so the hub is intended to be experienced. It's on several levels. Mm-hmm. You walk through from low ceiling areas to high ceiling areas, translucent glass, clear glass. It's sort of each room is a little bit of its own experience, and it's supposed to be that way.
There you have it, Terry Flynn, on this edition of In the Mix.